What do you think you're doing? You're listening to Crime Quest, a podcast covering the cold, the solved, and the theories. Join us.
Hey guys, how's everyone doing?
Everybody's good. Hello.
Good. So I guess we're kind of in a, I've been in a good mood all day. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I've been in a great mood considering the results of the Virginia election. Very exciting for us.
Yeah, we kind of, I don't think anybody expected what happened, but it was a good unexpected surprise, so.
Yeah, the Democrats laid it on thick this year. They, yeah. I mean, I was getting mailers. I was getting like four a day of mailers from, it was crazy.
It was. And we had people stop by like every weekend, every Saturday morning, our doorbell would ring.
Yep. We had the same thing.
Did you? Okay.
Yeah.
And I was actually working on a campaign for a candidate, and she unfortunately did not win last night, but we kind of were expecting it. But she was out everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
Did a great job with her campaign. I'm sorry she didn't win, but I think it was because she's been in a spot for a long, long time, and it was a tough district to win, so.
Yeah, I'm just, I had the a candidate's yard sign in my front yard, but people were still coming up and making sure that we were going to go vote, and so I felt like that was good, though.
Yeah, I think so. I like the fact that so many people got out to vote regardless of their party. I think that was a good sign.
I do too. I think we're headed in the right direction.
Yay! Anyway, now that we've gotten that out, I think everybody's just been like such a good mood since that happened that it's like you can't stop talking about it.
Yeah. So, yeah. It's definitely a big victory.
Yeah. That was exciting. And don't worry if you're conservative, we still like you too. We're just excited.
Yeah, we're just having our moment in the sun right now.
So actually, I'm actually really excited about this case too.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where I was Googling for something to do, and I came across an article. And it was weird because it was on the Chicago Tribune. I'm like, why is there something on the Chicago Tribune about Richmond? And then I looked and I found this case, and it was this whole wormhole of information. And it's fascinating. I had no idea about this. And it apparently was a big case basically around the nation at the time. So today we're going to be talking about Henry Clay Beatty.
You should spell the last name because it doesn't.
Yeah.
It's not spelled the name that it the way that it sounds.
No, it's Beattie. So it's either Beatty or Beatty, but I want to say it's Beatty.
Okay.
I feel like it's pronounced Beatty when it's got a Y at the end, so maybe the same way with an IE.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if the play in the middle is possibly. I wonder if they're part of like. I know we have a family that goes way way back. With the last name of Clay, so I wonder if they're descendants of that Clay family.
It could be, or it could just be a middle name, like a...
Yeah, that's true.
You know.
That's true. So, let's go ahead and get started. We're going to talk about this tonight, and I'm going to kind of jump around a little bit, but I kind of want to see... There's some interesting stuff that I'd kind of like to point it all out in a good order, so we're going to jump around a little bit.
Okay.
All right, so on July 19th, 1911, we had a young married couple. They were visiting the wife's uncle in a neighboring county. They both lived in Richmond, sort of on the cusp of Richmond and Chesterfield County. And I don't know, I mean, I've looked at pictures of it back then. Obviously, it was a lot more rural, but there was still a slight stretch of area in that spot where there were some businesses and things like that. The uncle lived in Chesterfield. The couple was from Richmond. While they were there, the the husband suggested that they go for a ride, and according to news articles, he had a snazzy yellow Buick. So I'm kind of curious to see what that would have looked like in 1911. And he wanted to go for a drive and just kind of be alone and talk. Now, they did have a five-month-old baby, so they left the baby with their family, and they went for a drive on the Bothian Turnpike at around 10 p.m. And I think back then it was just called the Bothian Pike. It kind of joined, there's one spot on the Bothian where you cross from Chesterfield into Richmond.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a divider of the city and the county. And I looked at a picture today, and it's really crazy. This was actually from, like, 1888 or something, and it was busier than I thought it would be.
Really?
Yeah, so I don't know if they were closer to Richmond, because I know Chesterfield was really kind of more rural back then, but so it must have been closer to Richmond. So because the place was quiet as you got into Chesterfield, though, it was a perfect place for the new parents to drive and to talk in privacy. So an hour later, though, the car came speeding back to the uncle's house. The husband was basically out of control and driving with one hand and screaming, "My God, they killed Louise." So Louise was actually Louise Owen Beatty, and her husband was Henry Clay Beatty. And in the weeks that followed, the murder of Louise Beatty and the subsequent investigation and trial would be a huge story, and not only in Richmond, but also in the rest of the country. So we're going to get into a little bit more about the murder, but we're going to kind of touch base on their lives first. So Henry Clay Beatty was born in 1884 in the Manchester area of Richmond. Apparently, it used to be part of Chesterfield, and then they moved it, and it became part of Richmond at one point. His father was a prosperous dry goods merchant and a pillar of the community. His family was very wealthy, so he was very spoiled by his parents. And for 1900 standards, apparently he was really, really wild. So I don't know if that means like cow tipping or running around. I feel like if you're wild in 1900, that could be anything from that to bringing hookers home every night.
Or yeah, or like drive, like speeding, you know.
Yeah, exactly. His wife Louise Owens was also from a prominent Richmond family. And the interesting thing is that Louise was actually chosen by Henry's father to be his bride. So apparently they did get along, though, because when they got married in 1910, they were a pretty happy couple, and their son, Henry Clay Beatty III, was born in May of 1911. So you kind of look at them and you think that they're this picture-perfect family. Not really, because Henry had been involved since 1907 with a woman named Beulah Binford.
Hmm.
So I guess now we know what kind of wild he was.
Yeah, so he was playing the field.
Yeah, exactly. Henry, I guess he'd been hanging around the speedier parts of Richmond. I guess, we know what those are now, but back then I'm wondering if they were the same thing. I know right now we always say Lee Street always gets a bad reputation.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe he was down there. I'm not sure if there were different seedier parts at that point, or Boulevard. I don't know how, I guess they wouldn't have called it Boulevard back then, but I know that's one of our seedier spots now. So in 1907, when he was hanging around those parts, he was 17 and he met Beulah. Beulah was pretty much known around the city. She was 13 at the time, and she was known to be a Hellcat who would take money from anyone and do anything in return.
Oh, so she was a lady of the evening?
It sounds like it's a man at 13. It doesn't say, I wasn't able to find out any information about her family, her parents. She did have family, but I don't know, they weren't in the area. So it makes me wonder where her parents were. So she and Henry actually became a couple really quickly. And in 1908, a year later, Beulah actually moved to Washington, D.C., and they were technically no longer together, but in 1908, she also gave birth to a baby boy, and she was adamant the child was Henry's, and she named him, this is going to sound familiar, Henry Clay Beatty III.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, he was, I guess there was already a Henry Clay Beatty III before the legitimate, but the, you know, the one that he wasn't married to had the third, and so did his wife.
Wow.
Yeah. So, unfortunately, Beulah did prove to be an unreliable mother, and she left her son in the care of a relative in Roanoke, Virginia, while she pursued a new conquest in Martinsville.
Yeah, it said that he was a baseball player in Martinsville.
Yeah. Which surprises me. I'm trying to figure out, did we have, like, were there local teams back then?
Maybe.
I can't imagine. I mean, I think there might have been, like, little farm teams. But unfortunately, the baby died within a year, and by that time, Henry did consider their affair to be over.
I read, too, that they said the baby died of, quote, poor health.
Yeah.
Where it's so funny, like, you think about how different our time is now. Like, if a baby dies, it's, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure it was a big deal back then, but now it's like, oh, my gosh, like, what went wrong? And, you know, we have the science.
Right.
But I'm wondering if back then it was just more of a, yeah, he didn't make it, moving on, you know, that kind of thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
Do you, in your research, have you ever found anything like that?
I mean, I don't think they grieved less for them or anything, but I think people had so many kids when we didn't have as good of medicine that it was kind of expected that you'd lose one or two. I mean, if you had like eight, it was rare to have all eight of them grow up to be adults. And I mean, as I know, as we got closer and closer, or we got further and further along in history, we had new medical procedures in the 1800s. At some point in the 1800s, in the late 1800s, they discovered sanitary
antibiotics.
No, more like just, you know, washing their hands.
Oh, right, right. Yeah.
Others in a room that's sanitary and clean and using gloves and
right.
And I think apparently infant mortality rates did go down a lot at that point. I don't think that people didn't grieve for their babies when they lost them. I think it was just it happened so often back then.
Yeah.
So hopefully we'll get that mortality ratio lower.
Yeah, I just thought that was pretty interesting. And then it says after Henry married Louise in 1910, mm-hmm. you were probably going to get to this, but that they also had a son that she named Henry Clay Beatty III.
Yeah.
So there were two of them.
Yeah, we don't know. I wonder, obviously Louise didn't know about the first one. I can't imagine that she would have, and then she would have allowed her son to be named the same thing.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it's really kind of hard to tell whether or not Louise knew about Beulah at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of what, I didn't find anything either pro or against that stipulation, or against that idea. So, because they actually did kind of settle into married life, and then the baby was born, but Beulah wasn't anywhere to be found until that point. After the baby had been born, Beulah moved back to Richmond, and she was living in an apartment that was paid for and furnished by Henry.
Interesting.
And this is kind of, this actually ties into to Louise's murder, because on July 14th, excuse me, of 1911, which was 4 days before the murder, Beulah received a note from Henry, and later this was called the Dear Kid Letter, and it was brought up in the courtroom in the trial. But it said, "Dear kid, pay 10 on the furniture and make him give you an itemized bill with oceans of love brimming with kisses, hun." So it was a short note, but it would be very significant in terms of the case and the murder.
So she wrote a letter to him saying that...
No, he wrote that to her.
He wrote that to her, and was that a... was that a breaking it off letter? What was the...
No, he was giving her money for the furniture and getting a bill, and then...
Oh, right.
Saying other than that, yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, he wasn't really, that's all he said. But, I mean, the way that he phrased everything, that doesn't sound like someone who's worked it off.
I would agree.
Yeah. So, let's go ahead and get back to the murder now that we've kind of gone into the background of everything. Excuse me. The night of the murder, when Henry drove wildly into Louise's uncle's driveway, he continued to scream like, "Kill Louise." Louise's uncle looked, and I'm going to call him Uncle Owen after this because I keep saying Louise's uncle and it's just not very...
Okay.
It doesn't really roll off the tongue.
Okay.
So Uncle Owen looked into the car to find his niece's bloody corpse. Her left cheek had a hole the size of a silver dollar close to her nose. Her hair was spotted with blood, and Uncle Owen thought that the top of her head had been blown off by the shot.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so it doesn't sound like it was a very peaceful way to go. So, at this point, Henry started telling the story of a highwayman who was responsible for the crime. And, you know, I'm sure it's the same back then, but highwaymen go back to, like, the Middle Ages and stopping travelers on the roads in, like, England, hiding behind trees and stopping them and robbing them.
So, yeah, so that's, I'm glad you brought that up because I was thinking, oh, a highwayman, like, a guy that was working on the road, like, that was That was my first inclination when I read that. And then you said that there's a, I guess this goes way back, and highwaymen were people, I guess, that would cause mischief on the road. Like they would stop your car or maybe rob you.
Right.
Is that kind of the deal?
Yeah.
And that's that's what he meant, right?
That's exactly what he meant.
Okay.
You know, I've read back in like England and you know European countries, and they would hide behind trees as carriages went by, or even as people were just walking down through a forest, and then they'd grab them and steal whatever they could get their hands on. And it was a big problem back in like the 1400s and 1500s.
Wow.
Probably 1600s too. It was just, you know, people, it was easier to hide back then, I bet too.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's who Henry decided he was going to blame the story on. He told Uncle Owen that on the road, he'd been driving the speed limit of 15 miles per hour.
Whoa, he needs to slow down.
We're complaining about like 65 now.
I know.
They're going 15.
Isn't that crazy? Like, I've always heard, this is probably stupid, but... So 15 miles per hour, I've tried to drive that. Like, I'm pretty sure that's what I drive in a parking lot. And it's actually really hard. Like, it feels like the car doesn't like it.
It's like the car wants to go faster.
Exactly.
But I wonder if early automobiles, that was a little bit easier to do, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know if I was reading it or if I remember hearing it as a family story or something, or if it's in a book. I remember reading about someone going out for a drive. And then yelling at them, his wife yelling at him not to go over 25 miles an hour because it was too fast.
Wow.
So, yeah, I guess the cars were designed to go a little bit slower then, but it's still funny to think about someone going 15 miles an hour down what we now consider a highway almost.
Yeah.
So, when they were driving down the road, the bearded drunk man with a shotgun had stepped in front of the car, and Henry had to brake abruptly, and it caused his car to stall. So according to Henry, the man yelled, "What in the hell are you trying to do? Run me down," at them as Henry tried to start the car, and then the man bellowed in a really menacing tone that, "If you start it, I'll shoot." So what Henry said was when he put his hand on the clutch, the car jumped, the bearded man fired, and Louise fell behind him. And then according to Henry, he leaped from the car to wrestle with the bearded man, who was much taller and stockier than Henry. And even with his difference in size, Henry still managed to get the shotgun from him.
Interesting.
I know. You can tell where the story's going. The bearded man fled, and Henry threw the shotgun in the car, and he fled back to Uncle Owen's house. And then he said he hit a bump in the road that caused the gun to fly out of the car. So, he's just kind of, feels like he's digging himself a hole.
Well, it's all very convenient, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So the police the next morning actually showed up at the scene with bloodhounds. They wanted to see if the dogs could track the bearded man in the woods. The dogs actually started in the middle of the road. There was a large puddle of Louise's blood in the middle of the road. So the dogs began to kind of circle it. And they sniffed the ground and they stayed close to the puddle, and they never actually moved anywhere else. They kind of seemed like they were puzzled, the police said, and they never actually found a scent or the escape route of the alleged killer after hours of snuffling the ground. So these are trained dogs who are hunting dogs, basically, and they're trained to follow the scent, and they didn't find anything. So because of that, the police were pretty positive that the dogs had led them to the real killer, Henry. And one officer was heard to say they cannot find the trail because there is none to be found.
He was right.
So I think the dogs are pretty interesting. I didn't actually realize they used bloodhounds that far back. I thought it was a newer thing with dogs in the police, work. So...
Well, isn't, and this is a total aside, but, like, do you remember the movie Lady and the Tramp?
Yeah.
Was it that movie where, like, they were looking for somebody and, like, they showed the officers with bloodhounds? And I'm pretty sure that movie is supposed to take place in, like, the early 1900s.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's just an aside. Yeah, I think that they, yes, they did definitely use bloodhounds back then.
All right, I'm going to go back and watch that. It wouldn't surprise me. So then, while the police kept going deeper into Henry's version of the event, they started to become more and more suspicious of the 26-year-old. So while the dogs were being called off of the scent, the shotgun was found along the turnpike, just like Baby said. The problem was it was found 25 feet from the road, which was a little bit of an enormous distance for an object to travel after simply falling out of a car on a bump.
Mm-hmm.
And the police obviously suspected that somebody had tried to hide it. So yeah, I can't go along the road. We hit a bump, and that shotgun just flew like 25 feet across the road into the woods. So
yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah,
Henry, just give it up. Like,
I know.
Come on, man.
We're not even done with it. So, I mean, you know, he's not exactly covering his tracks very well. Louise's injuries proved problematic. For Henry's account, the bearded man was 6 feet away from Louise when he fired. And at this distance, Louise should have had gunpowder embedded on her face. However, they did not discover any powder marks on her cheek. So that kind of threw a wrench in that little part of the story, too.
Well, not only that, she was shot in the left cheek, which indicates that she was she was shot by somebody on her left side. She was a passenger shot by someone on the left side, meaning that the driver probably shot her, but...
Exactly. So then the thing that kind of steals Henry's fate at that point was that his cousin, Paul Beatty, told the police a few days before the murder that Henry had asked to buy him a shotgun. So Paul actually said he complied, and then he brought the shotgun to him on July 14th, 4 days before the murder. So, I mean, honestly, if you're going to get a shotgun and tell somebody, why are you asking his cousin? That's really just too close. Not that I'm, like, telling anybody how to commit murder in the future. I'm just saying, you know, you don't ask somebody that's that close to you.
Yeah.
So at that point, they did have enough evidence to arrest Henry for the murder of Louise Beatty. And in addition to the strong evidence that they had, they also had a motive, who was Beulah Benford. The note was taken as evidence as well. So here's where I think Henry's wealth comes in a little bit. He was arrested, and then he was held at the Chesterfield County Jail, which at that point was a really small and simple old building. So he was actually then transferred to the Henrico County Jail, which was a lot more comfortable and more modern, in order to wait for his trial. So some of his money stepped in on that.
Yeah, I'm sure that I'm sure his dad made sure that he was comfortable. And it even said that, you know, his father stuck by him defending his innocence the whole time during the trial.
Yeah, exactly. You know, his dad was trying to make him as comfortable as possible. Luckily, he only had to stay in the jail for about a month because the trial started on August 21st, 1911.
I saw that. I was like, talk about a speedy trial. Wow.
They were bored. Maybe they didn't have enough to do back then. Because Chesterfield County, even the courthouse being all the way down in South Chesterfield, I don't think there was a ton of stuff even on the way down there. Because the area that I used to live in, I remember, and this was like northern Chesterfield, there were spots that were like farmland until maybe 20, 25 years ago.
Oh yeah, so and even where the courthouse is now is pretty.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say it's rural. Like, there's neighborhoods around it, but it's not a city by any means.
Yeah, exactly. So that was the courthouse then. Was an older wooden courthouse. I guess it was kind of falling apart. Now we have a huge complex, and you know, now I know where to go pay for my speeding tickets and stuff. Not that I've ever gotten one in Chesterfield.
Mm-hmm. They call, just for anyone, I just have to say this, they call Chesterfield a rest-a-field in Virginia.
Yeah. I've gotten lucky with Chesterfield cops. I have gotten a ticket for, like, not stopping at a stop sign all the way in my neighborhood, but I think that's the only ticket I've gotten in Chesterfield. Anytime near the end of the month, I know they say they don't have quotas, but they're out like crazy every month. So, I don't know if they're just making people work a lot more, So then when the trial started, Henry kind of stayed stubborn on the stand. He didn't really deviate from his story about the bearded man, and then he also denied that he had asked Paul to buy the gun for him. As far as Binford, he said that their affair had been over, but that, quote, once a woman of her class gets her hooks in, it was hard to get away, unquote.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. He said, these country folks cannot understand how a woman of the underworld can be crazy about a man.
Yeah.
They don't know when that happens how very hard it is to get rid of her. Mm-hmm. And he's referring to Binford, right?
Yeah.
Not Louise.
Yeah, so he's referring to Beulah. He said that the only reason he was keeping in touch with her and paying for her apartment was in the hope that he could help her to go straight. So, you know, it was an altruistic thing that he was doing. So the note that he sent Beulah on July 14th, the Dear Kid note, really was damning evidence that completely contradicted that.
Wow.
He kind of dug his own grave there. On August 28th, his cousin Paul testified and said that 24 hours after the murder, Henry had told Paul that he was sorry he had done it. And he also, and Paul also reiterated that Henry had asked him to purchase the gun for him. So Paul was sticking with the story too. Then on August 31st, Henry's father testified. And this was the only time that Henry actually showed emotion throughout the entire trial. And that was when his father described the marital happiness between Henry and Louise. The senior Mr. Beatty had stepped by his son's side throughout the trial. He supported him both emotionally and financially. So I think from what I read, it was really hard on his father, which I can't imagine why it wouldn't be. So the trial itself didn't last too long. It looks like it lasted just under 2 weeks. And when the trial was over, the jury retreated to deliberate Beatty's fate. And in just under an hour, they had pronounced him guilty and sentenced him to the electric chair. So then after the trial, he actually told reporters that he'd been tried and condemned for having an affair, not for murder. And the quote that you just gave, he said that. And then he added, had this case been tried in any court where these things are not uncommon this morning, I would have been a free man. So I don't know why he's trying to blame blame it on his terrible behavior, but...
Well, not only that, it wasn't just that. They found the gun was his...
Yeah.
What was it? His cousin's gun? That he, like, went with his cousin to buy the gun?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make any sense. Like, come on.
Yeah. I mean, you've got tons of smoking guns. So, I guess they did file an appeal. And the funny thing is, the appeal came back, like a shot. I mean, now it takes years for appeals to get through with the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
The Supreme Court came back with one by November 3rd of the same year. So he pretty much exhausted his chances within 3 months. I mean, now you have people sitting on death row for, 10, 20 years?
Yeah.
He had just about 3 months on death row, if they called it death back then. He did, on November 24th, he actually did come clean and offered a sort of a short but a complete confession, saying that he had murdered his wife, and that he was responsible, and after that he was put to death by electric chair. So...
Yeah, it said... I felt like that was the speediest trial I've ever heard of in my life.
I mean, maybe I just didn't have much to do back then. I mean, in Chesterfield, I guess, if the crops were done being picked, I guess it would have been... There wouldn't have been a whole lot else to do.
Well, not only that, I don't know how long they kept people in prison as compared to now.
Yeah.
Like, if you did something... So now we have the option of life in prison. You know, maybe that wasn't an option back then. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think it sounds like they... I don't know. It sounded to me like the jury was disgusted with them, and... I don't know how, if they were even given the option to do life in prison, or if it was execution and only execution. I'd be interested to know. That might be something to look at.
I'd love to look that up to verify if they had, if life in prison was even an option, or...
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting, too, that apparently not long after the verdict was reached, that Beulah and Paul... were reportedly negotiating with a movie or play magnet about the case.
Really?
Yeah, they were gonna.
I didn't see that.
They were gonna, I guess, have some sort of, make some sort of celebrity out of themselves from the whole thing.
I did look to see if there was ever any movie about it made. I did not find anything. But I did find that Eula actually left Richmond after the trial and went to Broadway.
Really?
Yeah, she offered to tell her story in vaudeville houses, which were really popular back then. And then, as well, she offered to pose for picture plays and film, since it was such a new medium in entertainment. And she was cracking up. She wanted to teach moral lessons about the wages of sin.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so, but I didn't read that Paul was with her. That would have been really neat if Paul had been with her. Not neat, but I mean interesting if he had been with her. Like a group deal between the two of them.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe they got together afterwards.
Yeah, well, the thing with New York, she actually got turned away by New York. Nobody really wanted her to, her morality lessons, and then she went to other cities and tried to do the same thing. But they basically all considered her a scarlet woman, and she was driven out of every city, and they refused to, I love this sentence, parade her depravity for profit. and it's funny because, I mean, that's where we kind of get into how this murder was such a huge thing in other places around the country, because it did become a front-page story in newspapers. And a couple of the ones that I found were the Chicago Tribune and the Atlanta Constitution. If anybody's interested, there's an Atlanta Constitution with this on the front page on eBay for sale.
Wow.
Yeah, I was tempted to get it, but I wasn't sure if I wanted that sort of story on my wall.
Yeah, I also read that the trial, so when the trial was going on, that the Western Union set up an entire building, like they took over the building next door to the courthouse to field all of the telegrams that were coming in about the trial.
Right.
So this was.
They actually, I thought they had one room, and then they ended up having to take over the whole. They moved up. They kept that room, but then they moved over to the building and took the whole building too.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was crazy. I can't imagine. Like, that just tells me that that would have been such a big thing here.
Yeah.
It's tiny little sleepy Chesterfield.
Oh yeah. Well, so here's my question about it too. Is
yeah.
Why did he sign a confession? Because if back then they would have executed you if you were convicted of murder, like let's say that that's what they were going to do, why would he sign a confession?
From what I read, he was trying to get right with the Lord.
Okay.
So I can see that, especially 100 years ago, people were a lot more terrified of dying and
of judgment,
all of their sins excised before death. So yeah, that was what I read, that he was trying to make it right before he was killed. It wasn't a long flowy confession or anything. It was just a really short. He did it.
Oh, definitely.
So, but it cracked me up because one of the stories that came out of it, and I think it was out of actually Chicago, there was a man who offered to go to the electric chair for him in exchange for $5,000.
What?
Yeah. And it turned out that the man was actually dying of tuberculosis, and he wanted to leave something behind for his wife and children to live on. So that kind of, like, made me a little sad for him. That he would do that for his wife and kids.
Yeah.
It's ironic that he's doing. He offered to do it for Beatty.
And,
you know, Beatty killed his wife and this guy's trying to leave money for his wife.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
I guess in that situation, Beatty's dad would pay the $5,000 to release his son and then take someone. Oh, that's such a weird situation.
Right? So, that was one of the things that came out of it. The last thing that I kind of had here was that he also became the subject of a country song in 1927. There's an early country musician named Kelly Harrell, and he wrote a ballad about him named Henry Clay Baby. And the lyrics are very, they remind me a lot of, like, the 1920s and 30s ballads that would come out, you know, all about riding the rails, and they sound like, not only does the recording sound like it belonged in 1927, the lyrics sound like they belong in 1927. So we'll put the lyrics up, but I actually wanted to just play a little bit of the ballad.
Yes.
I found it on YouTube by the original singer.
Whoa, yes, play it.
So it's really kind of scratchy, and but it's got that twangy sound that it had. So I'm going to play just a couple of minutes of it. Work into the middle section here.
Okay.
So here we go.
Henry, this may you must die. And don't confess that you will turn to your doom with a lie. And be this brother and sister. And in the land farewell.
Yes.
We'll put the lyrics up, definitely. And we'll also put a link to the YouTube video so you can listen to the whole thing. I couldn't find it on an actual, like, recording, but it was, I could find the YouTube video of it. So that's my case for this week. It was just, this was one of those just, like, hidden gems that I was so excited to do. because I've never ever heard of it before.
Well, I liked it because it was dealing with, like, it was really old, but it sounded like it caught the eye of everybody in the country, so.
Yeah.
And it was a big, high-profile case right here in a little old Richmond, Virginia.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's rare that we get those, so that's a good thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still kind of neat that, in 1911, you had your, you didn't have, like, all of the viral internet stuff and all of that. This was literally traveling by telegraph and newspaper, and so many people were fascinated by it.
Yeah.
So...
It's really cool. I liked the story. I mean, it's unfortunate that Louise had to die at the hands of Henry Clay Beatty, but it's just a really interesting story. So he ended up, he was electrocuted 3.5 months later. Like, three months and a week later. That's so crazy. Like, the time. I mean, that's basically, like, old school where they find you guilty and they cut your hand off the same day. I mean, jeez.
Yeah. I wish the justice system could work that fast for a few people now.
I know. I think that there's a good... I think that there's a good reason for why it takes much longer now, but it is a double-edged sword because what ends up happening, and I don't want to turn this into an episode about the justice system or the prison systems, but what ends up happening is we put people in prison for years and years and years and years, and, you know, what is that doing to, like, it costs a lot of money to keep somebody in there, and... You know, what are there better things that we can do? And I think some people would say, well, why don't we just, you know, kill him? But I don't, that's terrible. I shouldn't say that. But I don't agree with that. But I'm just saying that there's two sides to that. Yeah, you can execute them immediately, like right after you find out they're guilty. But then what do you do about the people that were not guilty but were found guilty? So wrongfully convicted.
I think there's a lot more light being shed on those kinds of things now. Because, you know, we had Serial first. And then, have you seen the confession tapes on Netflix?
Yes. Those are amazing. Like,
and it made me so mad.
They make me very angry, so I was only able to watch, like, two episodes. But, that's exactly how it happens, though. I mean, it's...
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that, you know, police are all doing that. I mean, obviously they're not.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I think that there are occasions where people confess to something they did not do because they were coerced into it or they were basically convinced. Like in that one guy on that show, they were telling him, well, you just don't remember. And they hold you in the room for, like, hours and hours with no food and no water, and you haven't slept, and you just want to get out of that room, and that becomes your motivation.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, I know that the police are probably under pressure. If it's a high-profile case, I'm sure they're under pressure to get somebody in jail to make the community feel better. But, I mean, it's so... I don't know, it's just such a double-edged sword on both sides there.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can make an arrest quickly, but you're getting an actual story about something that may not be true. You're basically, like, browbeating them into a confession.
Yeah.
Terrorizing them.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But I'm glad we're starting to bring more light onto possible false convictions.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that was it, right? We don't have any, well, we're going to, I have a mini-sode that I'm going to be putting out later this week as well. And so more to come on that. And that is all that we have for this episode, right?
So, yep, I think so. I did want to let you guys know, we do have a Patreon. We just put it up. It's patreon.com/crimefest. And we don't expect anyone to go out to make themselves worth or anything to donate. But if you can even donate like a one-time $5 or, you know, monthly, we've got some fun stuff planned once we get some followers and some patrons at certain levels. We're gonna have some extra episodes for you. We're gonna have some. I'm trying to work on some merchandise for us, and a new logo too. We're working on that. So we do have the Patreon. Please go visit, and you can see the kind of stuff that's offered at the levels that are on there. Go see our Twitter, Crime Plus Pod at Twitter, Facebook Crime Plus Pod, Instagram Crime Plus Pod. You can email us at crimepluspod@gmail.com. So just don't forget the pod every time you go somewhere.
Yes. Yeah, don't forget that. And also, if anybody has suggestions for the next show, we would love to know. I know on Facebook we got a suggestion about researching the Briley brothers case.
Oh, yeah.
That is not the only I want to cover that. I do want to cover that, but I will say that it's not an unsolved case. It's more of a we're just going to cover something that happened, which I guess we do that on occasion anyways. But,
yeah.
So that was a really great suggestion from somebody. So we love to get those. If you can just go to our Facebook page at, I think it's just Crime Quest on Facebook.
Yeah, just it's all one word. Just look it up and it should take you right there.
Yeah.
It's not a secret.
Or you can just tweet us at Crime Quest Pod. Tweet us a show suggestion.
Yeah.
We would love that. We love that kind of feedback.
Definitely.
Especially
and
if it's
for
Virginia.
Anybody who is, I'm sorry, I didn't interrupt, but for anybody who was getting a strange feed on Stitcher when you were listening to it, I believe it was NPR. I have fixed that now, so our Stitcher feed should be working fine now. So I apologize for that. Luckily, a friend of mine pointed it out to me, and she'd rather hear me on there or hear us on there than the NPR show. So. I don't know what happened there. For some reason, it just linked to the wrong show. But I've updated that and fixed it. So
awesome.
Y'all are all good to go if you listen to it on Stitcher.
Thank you so much for doing that.
Yeah, and thank you, Christy, for letting me know. So that's all I have.
Yep, I have nothing else as well. Everybody has a great week, and we will be back on with another show very soon.
All right. Hi, everyone.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for listening to Crime Quest. It is our goal to make this as informative as possible. If you heard something amazing and want to give us a review, please do so on iTunes along with a rating. If you have suggestions for show topics, please send them to crimequestpod@gmail.com. Also, follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Crime Quest Pod. Thanks! Crime Quest would like to give special thanks to Hemi Haynes for putting together our music for this episode. Thanks, Hemi!